So, Michelle, I finally got you in the car.
I know, it's taken long enough.
Now, you know, I've always called you that cat who always lands on her feet. You are that girl. I've seen you in so many different incarnations in show business. A girl grouper, a rapper, you know, an actress, yeah. A radio personality.
Yes. My mother, when I was young, I told her, look, I want to be a veterinarian. That's what I really want to do. And she's like, well, that's like 9 years of school. And I was like, okay, knowing full well that I wasn't that focused there and I didn't have those grades. She said, well, you'd have to kill dogs. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna be an actress.
And would you actually have to kill dogs?
Well, if you have to euthanize them, sure. Right. You'd have to go out and take a sledgehammer.
Well, I mean, come on, in show business, there are rougher things than euthanizing dogs.
I know, but I think that I was put on this earth with a skin that could handle that.
Oh, Michelle Visage. Michelle Visage.
Michelle Visage.
Michelle Visage.
DVM.
DVM. What's that mean?
Isn't that like the sign for a veterinarian after their name?
Oh, I did not know that.
Doctor of Veterinary Medicine.
I guess so. Michelle Visage is a veterinarian. I think that I don't see it, but
Oh, she interacts with the animals every week on
Drag
Race.
Yeah, she certainly knows how to put a bitch down, you know what I mean?
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Great, good one, Colin.
Thanks, Mary. I think that little clip is very very much sums up Michelle Visage and her saying, like, I have tough enough skin. I was made to have, you know, this tough skin to deal with that. I think for a long time, I didn't buy the Michelle Visage story. Like, I didn't buy this character, or I thought it was a character. But the more that I see her in different facets, and granted, I haven't read her book. I don't know if I'm interested in reading it. But hearing her on What's the Tea and seeing her in different things on YouTube and really just kind of getting a sense of, like, who she is, I'm like, yeah. Now that I kind of have a sense of, like, what her career has been, it's like, RuPaul's right. She really is like the cat with nine lives. She's done a lot.
You know, I always appreciated Michelle Visage from the get-go. She was always just a gay icon to me. I always found her androgynous. Like I said, when I first encountered her, I thought she was a burlesque performer. Like, there's something very queer to her and her persona. And if she's hanging around RuPaul, I think that's also saying something. Not that RuPaul is the say-all of what's queer and what's not and, you know, what's cool and what's sane and what's insane, whatever. But I think that Michelle Visage as a figure alongside RuPaul is an important icon, right, to look at. And I don't think RuPaul as a producer would put somebody that was less than stellar next to him. You know what I mean? And I would say the same about Michelle Visage in that same breath.
Right. But I think at the same time, what Michelle does really well and what RuPaul is clearly aware of is that Michelle, she takes the quote unquote second banana role and she runs with it and she owns it. And there's no shame in it because it's kind of like in comedy, there's the funny one and the straight man, and it's like the straight man is just as important. And not that she is. I mean, she is the furthest from a straight man that I can think of. But you know, she does take that second banana role. She does take that, like, riding on the coattails role, but she does it really well. Like, there's no shame in it, you know?
And, you know, it's also another reason why she is a gay icon. I mean, oftentimes, you know, the supporting actress, right, is the gay icon. She looks androgynous. People kind of always say she's like a drag queen. And I think that also helps her gay icon status, just how she is and who she is and the position she plays, for sure.
Yeah, and I think she's a version of androgynous in that she does drag. You know what I mean?
Like, right. That's what I mean.
Yeah, when you see her in high drag and Michelle Visage drag, she's one of the girls, you know, so to speak. Yeah.
It's not to say that she looks like a man or anything. I don't think that, but I get this idea that she is a drag queen, right? That she is a part of that culture, of that art form.
Yeah, and you know, I you know, she talks about, like, back in the the ballroom scene and voguing, and she talks about being a part of all of that. And I guess, I don't know why, for some reason, I just always kept thinking that she was talking a big talk, but the more I think about it and the more I've seen of her, it's like, she may not be gay, she may not be sleeping with women, but she has been living a gay lifestyle, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and even in that clip that we just listened to, I mean, the last thing she said was, you know, I have a tough skin, I can handle it, which is also another reason why I think gay men are attracted to her, because they too have tough skin. They've had to develop mm-hmm. tough skin. She is a voice for someone that is oppressed, someone that had to get by, someone that had to claw and fight in a way. And granted, she has much more privilege in the sense that she's straight, but another reason why she's a gay icon, I mean, she is not fighting for her straightness. She is one and standing in solidarity with the queer community. I love Michelle Visage. This whole episode, I think, is exciting to me, because that's all we're going to talk about is Michelle Visage.
Yeah. I'm excited to talk about Michelle. I know we've talked about her. We've mentioned her in different episodes, but I'm excited this episode to kind of give her a spotlight and to give her a spotlight. I mean, with anybody, you know, there's things about Michelle where I'm like, you know, I do roll my eyes, you know, the gluten-free vegan stuff. I'm like, all right. But on the same token, in the same breath, it takes a hell of a lot of willpower and a hell of a lot of strength and determination to figure out and determine that, like, your health needs to improve, and it needs to improve by going on an incredibly restrictive diet and yeah. giving up things like addictive foods and totally changing the way you live. And right. she fucking did it. I mean,
yeah.
She
yeah.
does look amazing. Not that it's about looks,
and
but...
I was going to say, it's not... I mean, I listened to the podcast, and I hadn't seen her when all this transformation had gone on, right? Because mm-hmm. season 8 hadn't come out. And... Or maybe it was even season 7, but I think it was season 8. And I could hear the change in her. Just mm-hmm. just her voice and her persona and who she was.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something, I think... You go through that experience, and then it's just kind of like, I think in a way it's, and this is more probably talking about, you know, changing diet and changing routine, but like you clear a lot of clutter out of your life. You clear a lot of things that fog you and a lot of things that weigh you down. And I think mm-hmm. that anybody who does that, anybody who goes to that extreme of changing their diet and listening to what their body needs is going to have that experience. And so it's kind of interesting in a way. I mean, I don't know if I look at her as like a, you know, a health icon, but I do think that it is very inspirational that she was willing to go to those extremes and to that extent and to stick with it.
And talking about it to keep herself motivated. You know, mm-hmm. I it's funny whenever she said the phrase gluten-free vegan on the
right.
podcast.
Right.
But I don't know. I didn't hold it against her. I was like, well, yeah, that's the only way to break an addiction is to talk about how you're breaking it, you know?
Right. And people who are vegan love to talk about being vegan. they do. And I mean, I'm not vegan, but this week I've been eating vegetarian all week. Today I was fully vegan. Yeah. And I gotta tell you, I feel great.
I gotta tell you,
these Boll & Branch sheets on this Casper mattress. Well, I'm playing on my Squarespace site.
I love Squarespace.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm just putting in my curly clips and, you know,
curly clips.
But I got to tell you, I feel great. And so I get it. When you make a change like that in your life, you want to talk about it. You want to share it. You're like, oh, my God, do you guys know about this? Like, I get it.
Well, I got to tell you, I think we need to introduce this podcast so that people have more of a context about what we're talking about. I mean, I'm afraid that people don't even know that she is gluten-free vegan or was gluten-free vegan. So, Colin, take it away.
Well, if you don't know what you're listening to, we're here to tell you this is another episode of All Right Mary, which is our podcast dedicated to all things Drag Race, the world of Drag Race, and the paradigm that RuPaul has created with this little TV show. And in today's episode, as we mentioned earlier, is going to be a bit of a dedication to RuPaul's classic second banana, Michelle Visage. Michelle Visage, or as she may be known around East Brunswick, New Jersey, Michelle Shupak. I see you, girl. I grew up in Rahway. I know where East Brunswick is, right down Route 27.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I used to drive by it all the time when I was going to Allstate chorus rehearsal.
Yeah. I know where you come from, woman. I know what that interstate looks like. So, Garden State Parkway. What? Anyway, So I'm excited to talk about Michelle today. But where do we begin? I mean, we've already begun.
Well, I thought we would take a little break, maybe with some trivia. One question in particular is a great question, I feel like. So I'm excited perhaps to do some trivia, if you don't mind. And then we can move on to Michelle Visage.
Sure. I mean, we typically, so, you know, for our new listeners, we typically do trivia every week, and it's usually more about the show and the queens and things that happen, because I am just like Rain Man when it comes to Drag Race. But this week, we're going to focus our trivia questions specific to Michelle herself. So take it away.
Well, I mean, and if you're listening, this is even more proof that Colin has no idea what the questions are. Sorry, Colin. I didn't tell you. The questions aren't necessarily about Michelle Visage.
This is what you told me. All right. Well, now I'm even more surprised and even more thrown off my game. So bring it on.
I lied. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not thrown. Nope. I can.
You're Game
this.
Of Thrones. Yeah,
I'm Game of
I'm
Thrones.
I'm sorry. Sorry, I went there. All right. So here is Michelle Visage. Excuse me, RuPaul's Drag Race trivia. If you're ready.
I was born ready.
All right. True or false? The following guest judges were on season 7: Olivia Newton-John, Mel B, Isaac Mizrahi, and Kat Dennings.
I am going to Kat Dennings. Ugh. It's like the Arden Marin problem. I'm like, what the fuck is a Kat Dennings? You know, I'm just going to, you know, my gut said false.
Pam Tillis.
My gut said false.
You said it's false. Wait. True.
I know I wanted to stop myself because I could see Mel B and I could see Isaac Mizrahi, and I already knew about Olivia Newton-John. Because there was that lip sync, and Ginger did that Sandy thing. She did that John Travolta impression.
Sandy!
But I could. But it was fucking Kat Dennings. Who? What is a Kat Dennings? When did she show up?
Kat Dennings. She was on season 7, and she was earlier in the season. I want to just look at my notes really quickly to make sure. Okay, Kat Dennings was on episode 3, Shakespeare, but she was with Mel B.
Oh my God! All I see is an empty seat behind the judges panel. I don't see Kat Dennings. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
Oh well.
All right. Next question, please. Who on the RuPaul Drag Race said the following quote? I push up my boobs for Jesus.
Oh God. Well, I just mentioned her. I mean, the only person I can think of is Ginger Minj, because she's, you know, cross-dresser for Christ.
It was Michelle Visage.
How is this happening? What is I quit. I don't want to do this anymore. Podcast right. Over. Sorry, Michelle. No, just kidding. Let's go to the next. It's fine. It's humbling. I'm learning
sorry,
new things every day.
I'm sorry. It's because you introduced this trivia with you calling yourself the Rain Man of Drag Race. So that's why.
Well, I up until this point, I have been. I mean, geez, a Lou, man. Now I'm like the Elephant Man of Drag Race trivia.
All right. Question 3. Who wrote on the mirror after she was eliminated? Balls to the walls, fishes, or bitches? You pick.
I have no idea. There has never been a more generic mirror message. Like, it might as well say, you girls are all great. Slay. XOXO. It could be anybody. Okay,
do
it again.
Do you want a hint? Do you want a hint?
Give me one hint. Yeah.
All right. So...
Or read
this
it again.
Queen was on season 2, and she wrote, she wrote, balls to the walls, fishes or bitches, you pick.
For some reason, and I'm on a real streak today, so I'm okay with losing this, but for some reason, my intuition said Morgan McMichaels.
Oh, you're very close, Mystique.
Oh my gosh. She wrote on the mirror? She could reach it? Okay. Well, oh well. Mystique, Squirrel Friends, we were talking about, because they just reviewed season 2 and they called her Mistake Summers Madison, and I was like, "Oh, it was so good." So, Squirrel Friends, you're doing email soon. Anyway, Fair enough. It's fine. This is just a really humbling week. You know, it's a full moon tonight as we're recording, so I think that's what's going on.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what's happening.
Ooh.
Yeah, spooky.
All right, so let's move on to our moment of appreciation, which is our podcast of appreciation for...
Michelle Visage, which, wait a minute, that's it. I lost all the trivia questions.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, Michelle Visage.
Michelle Visage. How you doing, Michelle Visage?
I feel like RuPaul at one point, like, used to call her that because of the Michelle Visage. Like, there's a lot of S's that he struggles with when he speaks. Michelle Visage.
I think they mentioned that on one of the episodes, that if she could go back, she would have chosen something different because it's so difficult to kind of like get your mouth around. It's so easy to make that error.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you want to redeem yourself with some trivia, do you know how she got the name Michelle Visage?
Yes, I do. Tell the tale, lady.
Well,
so when she was in the ballroom scene and she was first getting into it, someone, I can't remember who, but it was someone who was in that scene. They kept calling her Cara, Cara, which C-A-R-A, which is face in Spanish. But then she was like, well, I'm not going to go by Cara. You know, that's what everyone's going to think it is. So she chose Visage instead, which is, I don't know, French for Michelle Visage. I don't know. Face? Like, I'm assuming it's face. Yeah.
Visage means face.
Yeah. So that's – I'm just like desperately trying to get something right.
Go home.
Go home. You're drunk. Yeah. So that's I remember that story. Yes.
Well, anyway, so that is Michelle Visage, and our podcast is all about her. So let's pick up kind of where we left off before trivia.
Yeah. So Michelle Visage, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, but when is the first time you encountered Michelle Visage?
The first time I encountered her was on RuPaul's Drag Race, season three, right? Season two?
Season three, yeah.
And I thought she was this kind of rando burlesque performer. I didn't know what her deal was. I think after a while, I remember her being something, and I might have heard her on the radio. She became more and more familiar, but I don't know if I made that up. What about you?
Well, I mean, I think I talked about this last week, that I had first discovered or first heard about or first became aware of Michelle Visage. It's just gonna deteriorate throughout this episode. It's just gonna become static by the end of me trying to say her name. But I first became aware of her from KTU 103.5, the new KTU,
right,
the radio station.
That's where I think I've heard her. Yeah.
But do you? And I didn't. I was a little too young for it and didn't quite understand it. But do you remember the RuPaul show on VH1 in the 90s? Because Michelle was on that.
I know, but I don't remember it in the sense that I remember like seeing an entire episode, but I remember it existing. I remember loving RuPaul in the Brady Bunch movie.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually in both of them, right? And
yep.
And she was in my mind, right? She was somebody that existed. And I knew she had a show, and I remember seeing her on that show, but I don't remember the details about that show.
Mm-hmm. God, RuPaul was fabulous in the Brady Bunch. She was so good, fabulous, like so understated, like so. She just like she got. Oh God, that could be a whole other episode. Is RuPaul's 3-minute scene in the Brady Bunch and how amazing she was.
And not to mention, we're just gonna veer from Michelle Visage for a second,
fine.
But. Also, his very short cameo and not a lot of lines on the comeback with Lisa Kudrow.
Yes, and which is appropriate because the most recent episode of What's the Tea, Lisa Kudrow was the guest, and they did talk a lot about the comeback. And I remember, and we'll get into that in a minute, but I remember that scene of, you know, RuPaul playing himself in that scene, and it was interesting because again it was so, and I think he was kind of, he mentioned being kind of directed this way of like really playing it down, really not going, like really not trying to hit any notes. And it was just, it's interesting. It was just kind of like, oh, wow. I really feel like I'm seeing RuPaul in the scene. It really stuck to the realism of that show. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the comeback, what I love about that most recent episode of What's the Tea was that I felt like Michelle was speaking for me in that interview, like, she was saying all the things to Lisa Kudrow that I wanted to say. She was saying, right, like, do you know how brilliant you are? Do you know how incredible this character is? And, like, Lisa Kudrow was like, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a collaboration. You know, like, she was just kind of like, I'm, you know, sure. And I just was like, I was with Michelle. I was like, but do you realize how brilliant this is? It's like, yeah, she does. But it's, I felt like I so identified with Michelle in that most recent episode.
Yeah, she's definitely the fangirl when there's a star on that she's really into. And it's very adorable, you know. I find it endearing because she is kind of the podcast listener's voice in that sense, where she'll kind of butt in when she can, but at the same time she's just listening and taking in the interviewee.
Yeah, because, you know, some of the interviews, like, I think about, like, when they had Blondie on, and there was another one as well where it was like, maybe it was when David and Amy Sedaris were on, where it almost seemed like Michelle was, and this seems kind of judgy, but was like trying to keep up a little bit, but in the same way that I would be trying to keep up, because it'd be like, I would just feel kind of humble next to these like big figures, whereas RuPaul kind of,
and I'm sure she does feel very humble next to them. That's one thing I think RuPaul has talked about Michelle Visage that I totally see. But she is very easy to talk to because she's so just kind of like whatever. Yeah, she's just so present. And I think that some hosts and some interviewers or some podcasters aren't necessarily present. And I feel like even on the show, when she's playing a character of like stern aunt, she's still present. Like, she's still her. You could still kind of have a conversation with her. I always feel like she could at any minute be like, oh, hold on, my kids are calling, and then pick up the phone.
Right. Like, she's made it very clear that she's playing a character on the show. And I think what's nice is that she does those Whatcha Packins after each queen goes home, because it's like, it very much speaks to, I think, who Michelle really is. And I think it's very, and I think it connects to the fact that, like, Michelle goes on those Battle of the Seasons tours. She goes on tour with these girls. She does that legwork. She goes out and sees the fans. She's doing all of that work. She's not above any of it. And she really recognizes how important it is to be a part of that. And she's so much a part of building these queens' careers and helping these queens and mentoring them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Way more than RuPaul.
Well, I don't know about that, because I really don't know about that. But I do know that she goes on those tours and that she is essentially the adult in the room. She's the one giving them advice. She's a mentor. And she's just as much Mama Michelle as it's Mama Ru. She raises these drag queens, right? If she was a drag queen herself, she'd be the mother, and all these little girls would be her children. And she would take them on the road and present them and play host, and they'd roast her. And it's just how it's playing out. I feel like she's the stern aunt that is raising these boys, right, into being these artists.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I say more than she's doing it more than RuPaul is because I've heard a lot of these queens talk about how they, like, I think maybe Bob, he was doing some interview, maybe he was on Hey Queen or something, but saying that, like, there's almost zero personal time with RuPaul. Like, there's almost zero connecting, you know, time to connect with him. And then once the show's over, they don't ever see RuPaul. Like, they don't ever actually have that connection. And they only really, during the show, they see him when he comes into the workroom and then when it gets time to judge. And, I mean, even in the most recent season, they didn't even do the little lunches for the top four. So I really – I mean, and this isn't a knock against RuPaul, because RuPaul's doing her part. But
She's a busy woman. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's it really just says a lot about Michelle that she is – so incredibly involved with them, and in a way that we don't always see. You know what I mean? It's not only when we see it. I think the fact that she's willing to get on that tour bus with all of them and go all over the world, all of the country, I should say, though they do go all over the world, but, you know, to get on a tour bus specifically and to go to venues great and small, to stay in hotels gross and not so gross, and to be a part of all of that, I mean, that's really – that – that has an incredible work ethic in and of itself and dedication to what they're creating.
To sleep on a bus, to sleep in hotels with kids that are half your age. I mean, it's not that I think her age has anything to do with it, but I feel like for some people it would be hard. But yet Michelle Visage, being so authentic and present, she's able to just be herself around them, and they love that. That's, another example of her icon status, that she can be herself. She can be herself in any situation because she's there and she's cool with it. She's confident in herself.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that when she's, particularly when she's on those tours, and she talks about this on What's the Tea, is that she knows what her role is. She knows that she is there to keep, not necessarily keep them in line, but to be that person who's seen more than these queens have seen. Because she's been doing this for years, and she's seen different elements of it. She was in the ballroom scene. She's been on radio. She's been on television. She's written a book. She's on a podcast. She's on TV. Like, she has another TV show. Like, she really has done all these things. And some of these queens on these tours, I mean, they are so fresh to this level of fame. And as they say again and again, it does not last. This window will close. And I think it's really incredible, you know, and I guess this is probably true in a lot of different forms, but is certainly true in terms of Drag Race, that there is this window that opens after the season, you know, or really, you know, once the queens get announced, where these contestants can then make careers for themselves and can start to be the stars. You know, we talked about this last week with Ben de la Creme, that they can start to recognize their own stardom as performers and not just as the drag that they put on. And I kind of feel like she takes such a responsibility in helping them take that opportunity and really hone it and really grow with it. It's really, I think that can be a potentially thankless job, you know, because you have to be the voice that is sometimes telling queens who just want to have fun, telling 23-year-olds that just want to have fun and just get drunk and hook up and, you know, play, that, like, listen, this is your moment. This is it. This is when you make, this is when you build it. And they might not want to hear it. And I really respect the fact that she sticks to that task. It's not easy, I can imagine.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, she has a family of her own that she's raising, right? And she's balancing all of that. You know, the fact that when she, in a recent interview, she talked about her identity and how she sees herself, right? Because am I a TV star? Am I a singer? Like, what am I? Whatever I'm doing is my identity, is what she says. And becoming a mother now is her identity. She said it many times, that being a mother is who she identifies as and with first.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'm sure being a parent is a challenge in any way, but the fact that she talks about her daughter having depression, and you have to be so present for that, and, you know, understand how to respond to that and how to help her out of that. And I love the story arc of her with her daughter and seeing Hamilton and all of that. And I think, you know, to put in all of the energy to help pull your child through that situation and do all this other shit as well, it's just boundless energy. I mean, she has to, in a way, she has to eat healthy. She has to take care of herself. She has to not drink and smoke and do drugs, because she has so many things she has to do, you know, I love the kind of, you know, the fact that her husband stays home with the girls and is the stay-at-home father, and she's the breadwinner. And yet she is so still involved with the family in what she talks about on the podcast. It's just, it's really impressive. It's really incredible to balance all of that. And, you know, there's no comparison necessarily to RuPaul, but it's like, wow, she's doing all these things. Like, RuPaul doesn't have a family at home that he's got to, like, also put the energy towards. He can focus on his own life. And she's finding a way to do all of this. And I think that when it comes to, like, you know, we talk about Michelle Visage as a gay icon. I wonder, like who could she be compared to, or what is it? Because she's kind of in a league of her own. I can't think of somebody else who's really doing all of that as a gay icon. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I mean, well, like Cher is a gay icon. Lady Gaga is a gay icon.
Right, right. But there's so much, you know, I mean, Lady Gaga is like, she doesn't have kids. She doesn't have, you know, she's not trying to balance a family life at the same time. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
I think what I like about Michelle Visage is that, like, she's this high drag gay icon, and yet she is completely at the same time just this, like, mother and with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, wife, yeah. And then, I mean, it's so interesting. You look, I'm looking at a still right now of that video, the clip of the week, and it's Michelle next to RuPaul in the car. And, you know, you look at Michelle and you're like, oh my God, you are so adorable. You're just this cool mom, you know, who happened to have this like illustrious drag career, right? Where she was on every medium, every mass media platform. And here she is sitting in a car next to RuPaul, the most famous drag queen in the world. And she still has two kids. She's still killing it. She's making a lot of money. And she looks phenomenal. And yet, I don't think that if I approached her on the street, it would be a problem. I don't think mm-hmm. that I could never run into her at a Stop and Shop or a Duane Reade in New York. I don't think that I couldn't like run into her on a plane. And right. And that if I wanted to say hi, I could say hi. You know, and be right. like, hey, how you doing? I'm Johnny. I think you're awesome. Thank you so much for all of the support and all that you've done. You know, and I think – and that would probably be all I would feel comfortable saying to her, especially right. because, you know, I'm sure she gets it all the time. But I feel like she might just turn around and be like, hey, you want to walk this way with me? Like I could see that happening too. Mm-hmm. And not because like I have this deranged feeling of who Michelle Visage is, but I just think that that's who she is. She's there. There's no mm-hmm. ego. She's there. She's present.
Yeah. And I think that that's just in terms of like, I don't know, there's an interesting role model example there about fame and about still being grounded and still being somebody that you could approach in the supermarket and say, hey, I'm a really big fan of yours. And I think, you know, they talk about, I've heard queens talk about this in regards to, I've heard like Katya talk about this in terms of like meet and greets, you know, like these queens, they do this Battle of the Seasons tour and, you know, they're doing a full show every night. And then beforehand, because I think what they do is because so much of the audience is so young, they do the meet and greet for like 2 hours before the show. And maybe it's after. In any event, they do a meet and greet and a show. And what I remember hearing Katya talk about this, she was like, you know, that's so important to me because these people, you know, some of the, there's like, you know, 14-year-old kids who are standing in line for two hours plus, you know, like at DragCon, you know, that happened. And it's like, this is my job. This I'm like, for me to be angry with that, for me to turn that away, for me to avoid that is so ungrateful and is so not accepting that this is my job. This is what I'm here to do, is to connect with these fans and give them this experience. And it's not about whether I feel like it or not. Like, that's not a factor here because it's so important to do all of that. And I think that to me, when I hear queens say that, I'm like, Michelle taught you well, because that to me is just like Michelle advice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Michelle, she certainly has a great perspective into the world. And I think that's also maybe perhaps a reason why her and RuPaul are so close. That's another interesting thing to me about Michelle Visage is her relationship with RuPaul. You know, this creative genius, this producer, this artist, how that started and then how that maintained itself. Like, what is the connection there? I mean, you could always tack it on to a fruit fly or, you know, the straight woman who's always befriends the gay man. But I just don't think that's it with Michelle. I think she elevates that stereotype so much. She's not a Grace. She's not a Karen.
Right. Right.
You know, she is in many cases, she is not even like, I know that sometimes gay men are mothered by their straight female friends. And in that sense, I don't think that's the case either. I think that they were just peers. And RuPaul looked at her and said, okay, you're a peer. This is great.
Yeah. Well, and I think the reason for that, I think the reason that Michelle Visage doesn't fall into that straight woman stereotype, the, you know, fruit fly and, you know, fag hag and all that. I don't love that term, but it's a term.
Excuse me?
Yeah, all right. there are other words I could say, but I won't, because you'll just edit them out. But I think the reason that she goes above and beyond that is because she's not this outsider. She's not the straight girl at the gay bar hitting everybody with her pocketbook. You know what I mean? Like, she doesn't. She's not like a bull in a china shop the way that often happens, you know, like bachelorette parties where it's like, what are you doing here? Like, you're just objectifying all of this. You're just kind of like fetishizing all of this. Whereas I don't think she does any of that. I think that she,
she's at the party, you know,
she's a part of it. Yeah.
She's in the zoo swinging from the rafters, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that's really the glue of that, or like really what draws her into that, my sense, my sort of like intuitive sense from her story is really something that
her story
is that she has a you know, something that so many gay men have experienced, which is just wanting to fit in. And you know, she talks about being, you know, when she was in high school and like, just, she was never one of the cool kids, but she was always kind of the class clown. But I think there's also an element of like, you know, being adopted and just kind of I think that, that kind of sets a foundation. And so there's something that's deeper than being straight or gay that I think binds her to the gay community. And it's that she can understand this human experience that so many gays have felt of just wanting to fit in, of just wanting to be accepted, of just
being the outsider, right?
Yeah. And wanting to find your tribe and find your community. And I think that that is such a, it's not a completely only gay experience, but the Venn diagram of wanting to fit in and being gay is a lot of overlap. And I think it really ties to like, oh, you get it. You get the emotional experience. And I think when you know that somebody else understands you emotionally and has had that experience, that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you're sleeping with, you know?
Yeah, I think that idea of needing to fit in is, for me, what I see in most gay icons, right? And whether it's, you know, the celebrated gay icon or if it's the tragic gay icon, right? Gay men or women that have killed themselves and things like that, right? This idea that they didn't fit in and this is what happened. This is what happened when they felt they didn't fit in. And then you have the, you know, the celebrated gay icon like Michelle Visage, where it's like, yeah, I didn't fit in and then I figured it out. Mm-hmm. And here I am. Look how amazing. You know what I look like. You know who I am. I think the same about Cher. I think Cher was very aware of what it was like to need to fit in and found the gay community in that sense. Madonna, Cyndi Lauper, these are people that, women especially, that were in a man's world, just like gay men in a straight man's world, and needed to fit in somehow because they didn't fit the mold.
Right,
and they needed to find out by, you know, as RuPaul would say, taking the red pill from the Matrix, right? Mm-hmm. They needed to find out, oh, it's not real. None of this is real. I'm on the outside looking in to this very surreal place of men needing to do this and women needing to do this. And this is what you got to do when it's all real or it's all fake. Everything is drag. Even Michelle Visage said it. She said, you know, people think I'm a drag queen, right? It's because of what I am and who I am. And we are all born naked and the rest is drag. It's whatever we make it to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I like about the message and that sort of experience that RuPaul talks about and Michelle talks about, it's, you know, their audience, because of Drag Race, so much of the audience is now, you know, kids in high school, 13, 14, 15-year-olds. You know, it's like, I thank God, if I had What's the Tea when I was 14 years old, it would have saved me so much fucking heartache, you know?
Oh my God. You know? Oh my God. If I had RuPaul's Drag Race, What's the Tea, if it was more than just the Brady Bunch, because let me tell you, it was so important for me to see RuPaul in the Brady Bunch. Mm. Like, that was so important to me. Maybe I wasn't woke when Supermodel came out. It was just kind of like, oh, RuPaul, what is that? I had no idea. And then to see her in the Brady Bunch movie giving the queerest one of the Brady Bunch, Jan Brady, another gay icon. And so is Marsha, obviously. Actually, all the women on that
all
show
of them,
are gay.
All of them. Alice. Yeah.
Excuse me, Brady Bunch ladies. You are all gay icons. But anyway, so Jan, you know, helping Jan be the new Jan Brady. It couldn't have been more perfectly cast in my mind.
Yeah. Well, and it's so funny. It's like you compare RuPaul like helping Jan become the new Jan Brady and now RuPaul and RuPaul's Drag Race. You know, she's just like nurturing all these young girls into something. It's a cute little parallel.
Yeah, and Michelle Visage obviously wasn't in the Brady Bunch movie, but she does that as well, right? Mm-hmm. She acts as this icon. So
yeah, and so I think that that's, you know, as much as in a lot of ways I would not want to be 15 years old in 2016. There's too much on the internet. I could go on and on. I could get into a total rabbit hole about why I think it would be a really painful experience. But the one thing that I do think they've got is a glut of gay icons and gay role models and people helping you understand what it means to be gay and to, you know, understand that, like, you know, beyond it gets better, but that there are – that you're just so much validation. I think that's what it is. There's so much validation, and there was none of that, you know, 15, 16, 17 years ago when I was, you know, doing that exploration, you know?
Right. There's certainly more of it. There's certainly not enough of it, right? Mm-hmm. We still need a lot more in different parts of the country, in different parts of the world. I don't want to just paint with a broad brush here and we're all sunshine and rainbows. It's so easy now. But it's certainly much more visible. And there's certainly a way to find safety and sanctuary in a very kind of frightening world for somebody that's an outsider.
Yeah, well, and I mean, of course, it's not sunshine and rainbows, but when you can just log on to YouTube and you can just find tons. I mean, if all I had was whatever was on YouTube now when I was like 12, 13 years old, there's just so much. There are so many people beyond Drag Race, beyond RuPaul and Michelle, there's just so many people representing their stories and giving that sense of community and that sense of not being alone. And I really see RuPaul's Drag Race as a TV show as at the forefront of that, you know, because that's so much a part of the message. And you really see that in every season. The queens are always, and I know that it is producer prompted, but I have no problem with that because it's great that they're talking about the issues. But every season, these queens talk about politics. They talk about body issues. They talk about internalized homophobia. They talk about their families. They talk about all of these issues that kids in high school need to be hearing. And so even if you're living in, you know, an incredibly homophobic town in an incredibly homophobic part of the country, you can still log on to Logo TV and watch that and hear somebody else say, yep, I had the exact same experience. And to just know, okay, I'm not the only one. I mean, it's incredible. And I know that
it's an act of activism, right? Mm-hmm. I said, the show from its inception has been an act of activism, an act of protest in a way of like, nope, we're going to put these stories on TV. God damn it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I love that Michelle Visage is a part of this journey because she represents the other part of the outsider, right? It's not just gay. It's not just minorities, right? It's women. It's it's the freaks. It's the weirdos. It's people that don't fit in the mold, that didn't get that hand, that didn't get dealt that hand that said, okay, you're accepted. Okay, it's going to be easier for you, right? She was able to figure out a way to exist in the world when so many messages were saying you don't fit into the world. And she basically said, oh, well, I don't need to fit into the world. The world just needs to fit into me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think maybe that's something that really binds her with RuPaul, because RuPaul did the exact same thing. It was like, oh, I'm not meant to fit into this world. I am meant to march to my own drum. I am meant to do my own thing. RuPaul talks about that a lot. And I think it's so fascinating because, you know, RuPaul always kind of goes to that spiritual place, which I always find exciting, of just having that, really that wake up moment, that like Matrix wake up moment of like, oh, wait a minute. all of this is, none of this is real. Like, this is, I don't need to be a part of this. I could do it my way. And I think that Michelle kind of did it in her own way. And it's kind of interesting to see two people doing the same thing in different ways and then eventually their lives intersecting in a totally random way. Like, the first time they saw each other, they talk about, was like at some party in New York in the 80s,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't some
carefully... And they just recognized each other. They kept seeing each other everywhere.
Yeah.
And they just recognized each other, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it really speaks to what they talk about all the time of finding your tribe, and that there is this thing of, you do find your tribe, and it really... Your tribe is not going to come to your front door and knock and say, hey, we're here. You have to go out into the world. But there's something that happens. There's some energetic thing that happens where people find their tribe. And they are – RuPaul and Michelle are such a perfect example of that, of people who have who are on the same wavelength but were in totally different parts of the country and then eventually came together.
Yeah, Michelle Visage and RuPaul, it's a classic couple all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, they're a great little relationship. They're, I think, you know, take that, Regis and Kathy Lee. Like, I mean, I would love to see, I mean, obviously they did the RuPaul show, but I mean, I would love to see another iteration of RuPaul and Michelle doing something on TV, like a morning show. You know what I mean? Like something.
Oh, wow, yeah. It could be like, What's the Tea in the Morning? Oh, yeah. My God. What a brilliant idea.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would just be... It'd be so fun to see them doing that kind of stuff again. I mean, What's the Tea is great, but it's just, you know, it's so much more when you get to see them and really really get into that world. So, I had to come around to Michelle Visage, but now I really think as much of her as I do of RuPaul.
Oh, I'm so glad, because I agree. Yeah, I think she's a fierce icon.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, when I think of myself, 12, 13, 14 years old, trying to figure out what it meant to be gay, I think, God, if I had a voice like Michelle Visage in my life, it would be just such a fucking comfort and such a relief, you know? And because that she knows how to speak. And I just think it's – when we talk about how important they are, to me, the most important thing is that they're talking to kids, you know, who are just discovering their sexuality and just starting to – because it's like you were – I mean – you and I both know that when you first come out, or when you first figure out that you're gay, you start to put those things together. It's kind of like when you're super young. It's like those are your formative years. You know, I look at the early years of me being gay, and I look at how I learned, you know, to be gay, and that the only thing I had available to me was like porn. It's like I had to scramble to try to figure things out. And I definitely think it set a crappy foundation. I made a lot of shitty decisions and a lot of mistakes and had a lot of really skewed ideas that took me a long time to straighten out, you know, so to speak, because my formative years of being a gay man were built on like such false ideas. And so,
well, and what's so interesting is you're telling Michelle's story also. It's fascinating, right? This idea that's what binds us is this idea of, we were raised in a time when we didn't have any of those voices, where we didn't have people calling to us saying, hey, it's okay. Hey, over here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's the same experience. I didn't have anybody who was validating my experience. I was figuring it out on my own at 12 years old, which is a daunting task.
All right, Mary. All right, well, thanks so much for listening to our moment of appreciation turned into a moment, our podcast of appreciation for Michelle Visage. If you have any thoughts, questions, concerns, you need directions, you need some restaurant tips, you can email us at allrightmarypodcast@gmail.com, and we'd be glad to hear from you.
Yeah, and of course, if you want to go one step further, you could also subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a comment, let us know you're out there, let us know what you think, let us know what you think works, what doesn't. You know, participate. Let us know what you want to hear. Obviously, we are early in our podcast career, and so if you do reach out to us, we're going to talk about you. We're going to make you a little, we're going to give you a moment of appreciation. Maybe not as long as we did today for Michelle, but we'll give you a couple minutes. We'll give you some love. So reach out and touch somebody, or at least like leave us a rating. I don't know.
Well, also only touch somebody if there's consent.
Yes, please remember that.
So anyway, that's our podcast. Thanks for listening. So I'm just going to say, all right, Mary.
All right, Mary. Bye.
Bye. All right, Mary.
All right, Mary.